You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 7th of March. In a few minutes here, we're going to be talking about the problem of DNA and the theory of evolution. You would think that with something as fundamental to the propagation of life and to the things that are supposed to drive evolution, like mutation, randomness, you would think that they would have a clear and very basic explanation for the origins of all the information that we find in DNA, not only in our own DNA, but in the DNA of even the simplest organism from which we were all supposed to have evolved. Oddly enough, evolution has no credible, well, actually doesn't even have an incredible explanation for the origin of that information. There is an explanation, but evolution doesn't want to hear it. We'll be talking about that in just a minute with Dr. Stephen Meyer. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for March is a unique one. This is one that is not just aimed at your kids, but at the entire family. It's called My First Hymnal. I remember growing up in a Christian family, and there were children's song books. There were little children hymnals. They were just song books with simple children's songs in them. Well, My First Hymnal is of a different caliber. It actually is a hymnal for children. It has hymns, the historic hymns of the church, in a simplified form for family and children use. It also has a selection of the Psalms. It has prayers. It has certain rites for family devotion. It is a hymnal for your kids. Find out more about it from Concordia Publishing House. Give them a call, 1-800-325-3040, and order My First Hymnal, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. Or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Stephen Meyer is a former geophysicist and college professor, director of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, author of several books, including Signature in the Cell, DNA and the Evidence for Intelligent Design. He's also written an article for the latest Christian research journal titled Unlocking the DNA Enigma. Dr. Meyer, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, it's great to be on with you. Thanks for calling.
You would think that a theory such as evolution that says that all this that we and all that we are is the result of random mutation over time, you would think that they would have an explanation for the regular course of events in DNA, not so much mutation, but the transmission of genetic information. Do they?
Well, I guess it depends on who's the they we're talking about. I think biologists have a pretty good idea and a pretty good understanding since Watson and Crick and what's called the molecular biological revolution of a number of things. First of all, we have we know where information is stored in the cell. It's stored on strands of the DNA molecule. We know what that information does. It directs the construction of proteins and protein machines. But what we don't have a good answer for is where the information came from in the first place. And that's particularly a difficult question in association with the whole question of how life got started in the very first place. A lot of people don't realize that Darwin's theory never really even addressed that question of the origin of the very first life. And yet, if we want to give an account of the ultimate origin of information, of biological information, the information that's necessary to make life work, we have to go right back to the very beginning and say, how did that information arise, in particular the information that's necessary to make life in any form possible?
The just-so story that we often hear from at the lay level about the origins of life is that, well, if you got enough time, some energy, maybe some heat, you have a primordial earth that has, you know, we're always told about the primordial pond where all of the ingredients for a cell are kind of randomly floating around. Well, sooner or later, you're going to have a functioning cell. A lot of people just buy that at face value. I take it it's more complicated than that.
It's a lot more complicated than that. In the book that you mentioned, Signature in the Cell, I addressed this, the question of the origin of life. That's what the book was about, but also about the deepest aspect of that mystery, which is the origin of the information that's necessary to build a cell. Here's a way to get at that. I think I used to use with my students, I'd just ask them, if you want to give your computer a new function, what do you have to provide it? What do you have to give it? And they would right away understand that, you know, there's a relationship between information and function. You got to give it code or instructions or software. And the same thing is true in life. If you want to build a new living organism from a simpler pre-existing form, or if you want to build life in the very first place, you have to provide instructions in the form of the information that's stored on DNA that directs the construction of all the proteins and protein machines that cells need to stay alive. And so that's the really big question. And the Just So story really falls short when people begin to, first of all, calculate the odds. If you look at a pure chance hypothesis, you know, the amino acids knocking into each other in the prebiotic soup, or the constituent parts of DNA, the so-called bases and sugars and phosphate molecules, and you even if you imagine a soup that is rich in all the right constitutive elements, all the right building blocks, getting those building blocks to arrange themselves in ways that are functional or biologically meaningful is no mean feat. And when you start running the numbers on the probability associated with the random assembly of even one functional gene or a protein molecule, it's the scientists have concluded it's just not possible or plausible. It's not plausible. And so what you end up with it really is actually consensus that chance does not explain the origin of life, and scientists who are still trying to explain the origin of life through a purely naturalistic way are looking for other kinds of naturalistic models or mechanisms, and so far not with much success.
Okay, you talk about one of those attempts to explain, or at least an apparent attempt to explain, the information organized in DNA. And we're talking about vast amounts of information and very complex information, but which sounds like just kicking the can down the road one more time. And that is, well, they say, well, it's not so much we can't explain necessarily the origin of DNA, but maybe the DNA came from RNA. Is that a solution?
Right. It's exactly a kicking the can down the road kind of strategy. And the most popular current model is not the idea that information in DNA arose purely by chance interactions of all those molecules sitting around in the prebiotic soup, but rather there was an early state in the history of the prehistory of life in which there were RNA molecules that were capable of what they call what's called self-replication. They were able to copy themselves in a way similar to the way organisms today can reproduce, so that by engaging in this self-replication, then you would set up the conditions for natural selection to work, where the most favorable variants from the ancestor molecules could compete with each other, and then they would win in a survival for resources and live on to change the characteristics of the population of molecules, and eventually those molecules would become complicated enough that they would actually become a living cell. The problem with that whole approach, it's ingenious, but the approach, first of all, wasn't even devised to address the information problem. It was devised to address another problem that's facing origin of life researchers, which is something called the chicken and egg problem. You need DNA to build proteins, but you need proteins to read and process the information on DNA. So in any living system, you've got this complex, functionally integrated, interdependent system of complex molecules, and it's hard to imagine how any one of them could have arisen without the other. So the idea was, well, if you need RNA or if you need DNA to make proteins and proteins to make to produce or to read the information on DNA, maybe there was some other molecule that could do both what proteins and what DNA can do, and RNA was proposed. RNA does some things that DNA does. Well, there's a lot of things that DNA does. It does some things that proteins do, but it doesn't do everything that proteins do. And so even on its own terms, it's not a very good hypothesis. But it also doesn't address the information problem, because even to get an RNA molecule up and running that's capable of replicating itself, you need to have very specific arrangements of all the chemical constituents that carry the information. So you need information to make RNA self-replicating so that maybe that self-replicating system can someday produce information. In other words, you're begging the question of the origin of the very thing you're trying to explain. So the RNA world is, it's not only kick the can down the road, it's begged the question as to the ultimate origin of information, which is the main problem that everyone in origin of life research has been trying to solve. So it's been very instructive, actually. We don't call it the kick the can problem down the road. We call it the displacement problem, and it sounds a little more technical and scientific, but it's basically what you say, kicking the can down the road. Every attempt to explain the origin of information apart from intelligence has either failed or has invoked some earlier pre-existing source of information, whether it's in a computer simulation, a program, or whether it's the information that's input by the investigator who's manipulating the experimental system, or in the case of the RNA world, you just presuppose the information you need to get the system going, but then, of course, you haven't explained the ultimate origin of information. So it's a problem unless you consider the possibility that an agent, an intelligence, a designing mind played a role in the origin of life, which is what I argue in Signature in the Cell we should be considering, because what we know from experience is that it always takes a mind to produce information. So the presence of information based on our experience points back to just such an entity.
We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. We'll also take your questions and comments for Dr. Stephen Meyer as we talk about the problem of DNA in evolution. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At steadfastlutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. SteadfastLutherans.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Stephen Meyer is our guest, a former geophysicist and college professor, director of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, author of several books, including Signature in the Cell, DNA and the Evidence for Intelligent Design. He's written an article recently in the Christian Research Journal titled Unlocking the DNA Enigma. Let's see what Chris has to say. He's listening in Indianapolis. Thanks for waiting on the line, Chris.
Thanks. Dr. Meyer, I have a question for you. I first ran into arguments similar to yours from the late Dr. A.E. Wilder Smith. And back in the day, in his book, The Natural Sciences Know Nothing of Evolution, he made the claim that that it's impossible to create a DNA molecule, considering the fact that the DNA information is actually coded three-dimensionally in the DNA molecule itself. And he was making the claim that it's impossible to make a DNA molecule using only chemical means without information. And therefore, a spontaneous biogenesis is not possible. Have chemists figured out how to build a DNA molecule without information yet?
That's a great question, Chris. Thanks for waiting on the line.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are DNA sequencing machines that can build DNA molecules artificially, but the origin of the information is something that's being provided by the chemist. So the question is, what can chemistry do unassisted by an intelligent agent in developing information? And what I do in the book Signature in the Cell is I look at three basic approaches to that question, three basic naturalistic attempts that have been attempted, theories that are based on pure chance, theories that are based on a reliance, which rely on natural law, and theories which in some way combine natural law or necessity and some kind of random or chance element. And the RNA world theory that I mentioned before is an example of the combination approach. There are self-organizational theories that attempt to account for the origin of information in a purely by reference to some kind of fundamental laws of physics and chemistry. And then there, the earliest approach, from dating back to the 50s, was to hope that time and chance would get the job done. That's no longer in currency. I think almost all serious origin of life researchers and biochemists reject the pure chance approach. And you still have advocates of either RNA world or self-organization. But in the book, I go into quite a lot of detail about why these approaches are failing, too. Typically, we now have a lot of researchers saying we need a pre-RNA world because the RNA world is begging so many important questions that still need to be solved. So the question isn't the physical construction of the DNA molecule. It's the origin of the information that the molecule contains. If you remember just the basic chemistry, I'm sure you do, based on your informed question, but you have the sugar phosphate backbone, which forms the outside of the twisting ladder, and the rungs of the ladder are the base pairs, and it's the bases that are attached along the spine of the DNA molecule, which the sequential order of which provides the information, the instructions for directing protein synthesis. So it's the arrangement of those characters which is so mysterious. The chemistry of the DNA does not dictate that the bases would be arranged in any particular sequence, so you really can't explain it by reference to basic laws of physics and chemistry. The odds of that much information arising are well beyond what you would expect given the known time of the universe. And attempts to combine chance and law have not fared any better. So I go through all these different options in the book in some detail, and I conclude that none of the naturalistic approaches have solved this problem. That's why I call it the DNA enigma. And interestingly, leading evolutionary biologists agree, even someone not known for restraint and advocacy of evolutionary theory like Richard Dawkins very candidly acknowledges that no one knows how the origin of life occurred, and he also notes that the problem is directly related to what he calls the signature of intelligence that may exist in the cell, the origin of information. So at the end of the movie Expelled, Dawkins speculated that perhaps there was some other there was an intelligence involved, but it was a space alien of some kind. So it's a big problem. People haven't really solved it.
Well, I mean, I was going to mention Dawkins has this kind of cosmic life seed thing that he talks about. But isn't that just kicking the can way, way down the road, in essence saying, well, the intelligence was obviously an alien intelligence, But he still doesn't explain where that life came from either.
Yeah,
does he?
And he's not saying that it was an alien intelligence. He's just saying that's a possible explanation. But if you invoke that explanation, the origin of that intelligence must be explained by purely naturalistic processes. And there you're right. I think that proposal does exactly kick the can down the road, because if you can't explain the origin of life on Earth, simply saying that it happened, because you can't account for the origin of information in life, simply saying it happened somewhere else in space only pushes the problem someplace else. And the basic theoretical difficulties and empirical difficulties of producing information still stand. The other reason that I'm ill-disposed towards the alien design hypothesis is that, in addition to the evidence of design that we find in the biological realm, we also have evidence of design built into the very fabric of the universe in what physicists call the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics. And that fine-tuning has existed from the very beginning of the universe. It's, as I said, built into the fabric of the universe, and it's not the kind of thing that any agent or being imminent in the cosmos and could be responsible for. It seems to be pointing to the need for some kind of transcendent intelligence, the intelligence that is responsible for bringing the universe itself into existence. And therefore, I think when you look at all the evidence of design, both the design evidence of design you find in biology, but also in physics and cosmology, the theistic design hypothesis makes a lot more sense than the kind of alien idea that still is trying to preserve naturalism as a worldview, which I think fails.
Well, what do you make of this? And this is the kind of the explanation that's in vogue in cosmology, and then I think also among some people who are grappling with the information problem for evolution, and that's the anthropic principle. Well, we don't know how it happened. We don't know where the information came from, but it must have come from some place of natural consequence. Otherwise, we wouldn't be around here to ask the question.
Well, right. The problem with the strong forms of the anthropic principle and the weak anthropic principle both is that they invariably do not actually invoke a cause. They simply restate a fact of the matter, which is if the universe hadn't been finely tuned, we wouldn't be here to observe it. Well, since we are here to observe it, they say, that explains the fact that that explains why the universe is finely tuned. Well, it does explain our existence in light of the fine tuning. It says we wouldn't be here had the universe not been fine tuned, and so it, in a sense, makes the fine tuning unsurprising, but it still doesn't give a causal explanation of how the universe came to be fine tuned. So it doesn't really address that fundamental question. And there are other forms of the anthropic principle that make similar kinds of philosophical blunders, where they're restating the fact but not actually positing a cause, and certainly not a cause that we know is sufficient to produce the phenomenon, the fine tuning. You also have models, so-called multiverse cosmologies, where people try to render the otherwise improbable fact of the fine tuning more probable by invoking gajillions of hypothetical alternative universes and saying that none of those universes are finely tuned. We just happen to be the lucky ones.
About 15 seconds here.
Yeah, go ahead. So, that's problematic as well, not least because we have no evidence of those finely tuned universes, but also because the models that physicists invoke to explain where those other universes could have come from themselves implied the need for some kind of mechanism which was fine-tuned. So the fine-tuning just presupposes prior fine-tuning, and you don't really get out of the soup. So the design hypothesis actually has a lot going for it these days, not only in terms of explanatory power, but also simplicity.
Folks, you can find a link to the Discovery Institute under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Stephen Meyer is a former geophysicist and college professor, director of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, author of the book Signature in the Cell, and he's also recently written an article for the Christian Research Journal titled Unlocking the DNA Enigma. Thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thank you for having me on and giving me a chance to talk about these exciting things.
Folks, here's a way that you can help us equip the priesthood of all believers. It's called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. It's our monthly or annual donor program. It includes benefits like t-shirts, books, broadcasts, transcripts, and advertising for your congregation. Check out the Issues Etc. Reformation Club at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Please consider supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. in 2012 by joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Of course, there is a common everyday, and we see it in so many ways, explanation for information usually comes from an intelligence. And I think it's fair to posit that in the case of the information we find in the universe around us and in us, it came from an intelligence too. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.